There's Callie on How to Get Away with Murder. Nope. There's Callie on Grey's Anatomy. Nope. There's Arizona on Grey's Anatomy. Nope. There's Callie on Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
Welcome to One More Thing with Jay and Robert.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Robert. One More Thing is a podcast celebrating LGBTQ plus pop culture, recorded live in Jay's living room.
Here we are.
A full week after our first episode.
It's been a really exciting week for us.
It has. We've been loving all of the feedback that we've been getting.
Yeah. We love our fans. We can't believe we already have, like...
Should our fans have names? Should we have fan names?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Like, what does Ariana call hers? Farianas or something? Farianators? Or Grande? It's like...
I don't know.
I forget.
But there's, like, Little Monsters.
Oh.
Harmonizers.
What's that?
Fifth Harmony fans.
Fourth Harmony.
What could we be? Fingers.
What?
One More Thing.
Oh, I thought you said fingers, and
no.
I was like, I'm not the biggest fan of that. Tweet at us at One More Thing, and let us know what you think.
What you want to be called.
Yeah. So when we reference you, we can talk about that.
Last week we talked about movies. This week we're talking about TV.
I mentioned in the first episode that I don't watch a lot of, like, big budget gay movies, but I feel like I watch a lot of gay TV.
Yeah, me too. Looks like we forgot how to record a podcast. Anyway, we're talking about TV. Okay, here we go. Robert.
Yeah?
Do you know what happened on April 14th, 1997?
I do, but only because I know what we're talking about today.
On April 14th, 1997, Ellen DeGeneres was on the cover of Time magazine with the headline, "Yep, I'm gay."
I know that picture because she has that, like, gross, like,
yeah,
flipped out haircut.
So bad.
Yeah.
It's kind of a little historical week for us because on April 30th, 20 years ago, the puppy episode aired.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
So she had a sitcom called
Ellen.
Yeah. And it was the episode where her character came out. And
I said, like, it's a sad thing. Like,
how sad. And do you know who else starred in that episode?
Who?
Laura Dern. It's a classic coming out episode. Laura Dern is a lesbian. I haven't seen it a long time, and I don't care to look it up. So I think Laura Dern is a lesbian, and Ellen DeGeneres comes out or something. I don't know. Welcome to One More Thing,
Laura
the show
Dern.
We don't fact check.
Does she come out to Laura Dern?
She comes out to the whole world.
She is
comes
she
out in an
Laura
airport.
Dern?
Yeah, I think she's dating Laura Dern.
Ellen DeGeneres is dating
so.
Laura Dern?
I think we should look it up. Yeah. Okay, so Laura Dern asks Ellen out, and Ellen is like, "Yo, I'm not gay." And then Ellen is like, "I'm gonna go fuck a guy to prove it." And then she goes to her therapist, and she's like, "I couldn't have sex with that guy because we don't click." And the therapist is like, "Well, is there anyone you ever have clicked with?" And she's like, "Laura Dern." And then Ellen goes to tell Laura Dern at the airport that she's gay, but she accidentally says it over, like, the PA system. And Laura Dern comes back and is like, "All right," and they're friends.
How wacky.
Or
they're girlfriends?
Oh, wait a second. The next day, Ellen and Susan are at the bookstore. Susan tells Ellen that she does have feelings for her, but she is in a long-term relationship. Ellen is heartbroken and Susan leaves. To cheer her up, her friends take her to a lesbian coffee house. There, Ellen mistakenly thinks her waitress is coming on to her and is chagrined with a woman flirts with Paige. Who the fuck is Paige? Instead of her. Under the closing credits, Susan leads Ellen over to Melissa Etheridge, who confirms that Ellen is gay, and after completing the necessary paperwork, awards Susan a toaster oven. The fuck is this? I don't know. This is weird. Anyway, Ellen came out 20 years ago, which is so exciting.
Great time for it to be Ellen DeGeneres.
Well, but also that she got blacklisted for a long time.
What do you think I'm trying to say? Oh, I'm not going to say it again and be wrong. No, you're not wrong. You're right. This is so hard, but I think I've realized that I am, I can't even say the word. Why can't I say the word? I mean, why can't I just say, I mean, what is wrong? That why do I have to be so ashamed? I mean, why can't I just say the truth? I mean, be who I am. I'm 35 years old. I'm so afraid to tell people. I mean, I just, Susan, I'm gay.
Thank you.
That felt great. That felt so great. And it felt so loud.
So then after the Ellen show, there was the two, like, big gay shows were Will and Grace and Queer as Folk.
Yes, and I have seen every episode of both of those.
I have seen every episode of Will and Grace multiple times. Mm-hmm. I have not seen every episode of Queer as Folk. I've only seen the ones you've showed me.
Yeah, which are the ones where the lesbians have sex.
All right.
This was a couple years ago. I was like, oh, I've never seen every episode of Friends in order, so let me do that. And then I was like, oh, well, I've never seen Sex and the City, so I did that. And then I was like, I've never really seen Will and Grace. So let me do that. And I sat down and I got maybe halfway through the first season and then just got intimidated by how many episodes there were. And then last summer I was like, Jay, I'm going to like do it. I'm going to plow through Will and Grace. It took me maybe 3 weeks and I just did all of it.
And the most heartbreaking moment of our friendship was when you watched the Patti LuPone episode when I was asleep. And I woke up the next morning and I was like, no!
good show.
It's such a good show. And it was like, I mean, Bill Clinton, our dear friend, I think.
Our good friend and neighbor, Bill Clinton.
I think he was the one who said that, like, Will and Grace made America okay with gay people. Is that true? Again, the show where we don't fact check. I swear Bill Clinton said something. It was Joe Biden. He says, I think Will and Grace did more to educate the American public than almost anything anybody has ever done. People fear that which is different. Now they're beginning to understand. Because Will and Grace was, like, the show that started it all. Like, it was the first, like, really gay show.
I mean, I have a very vivid, like, weirdly vivid memory of being, like, younger and watching an episode of Will and Grace with my mom because it came on after or before Friends and seeing Jack with the Cher doll.
Mm-hmm.
And
my third favorite
turning
episode.
To my mom and being like, why is this funny? Because there was the laugh track going. Yeah. And I was like, I don't understand. And my mom was like, oh, he's just a lot sillier than they are, which is true. And I like never understood that, like, he was gay, and like the fact that he was flamboyant was like funny. And I have a problem with the way that they treat flamboyant gays in that show, but that is a very different thing.
Yeah,
which led to me wanting to watch it last year because I was like, I've never really watched it knowing what gay was. Very much how I saw Philadelphia.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up on Will and Grace. It was like my childhood show in the way that Friends is a lot of people's childhood show.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen every episode. We're actually sitting 2 feet away from my Will and Grace entire series box set with Deborah Messing staring out at us. I turn it depending on my mood to like which character is going to be looking at us.
I've never seen it not be that Grace.
For a long time, it was Megan Mullally. I make it Megan Mullally when I'm sad. But yeah, it was a big part of my childhood and my growing up, which is something I'm really glad for, because it was like, I mean, I knew a lot of gay people when I was a child, but it also was like, I never was like, where are the gay people on TV? I was like, where are the lesbians? But I never was like, help.
Meanwhile, I was watching Friends, which had a lesbian couple.
Wow, if only we'd have traded lives.
It's like In Her Shoes. Or like Sliding Doors.
Or like If Then.
Just because I'm a very boring person, Queer as Folk as well, I didn't watch until maybe a year or two ago. It took me a very long time to get through it because it is not a good show. But it is relatively interesting and they talk about a lot of good stuff. And I feel like this is maybe a bad opinion, but I feel like if they would have taken out all of the raunchy stuff and put it on like primetime television or on like, you know, Tuesday nights at 8 on Fox or something, because of the subject matter that they do cover, it could have done a lot for the gay community.
The interesting thing about Queer as Folk for me is that Will and Grace and Queer as Folk are kind of like two sides of the same coin, in that like Will and Grace is very, despite the fact that it has such a huge gay population, it's very heteronormative.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like relationships.
Oh yeah.
You know, like, the show ends with Will married with a child.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone is always looking for, like, a solid long-term relationship. And the parts of Queer Folk that I've seen are kind of the opposite direction of that, which is, you know, the other part of the gay community that doesn't really want assimilation. It's like, you know, we should be allowed to just, like, fuck anyone we want.
Yeah, I mean, there are three strong couples on it. There's one couple that's, like, serious monogamous couple. And then there's one that's an older man and a younger man. And then there's one that is just, like, two hot gay guys that just want to fuck around, but then, like, be each other's boyfriends when it comes time to do that. And all three are very equally represented, and none of them are ever mad at each other for it, which is kind of how I stand. Yeah. I'm like, you know what? I don't care what you do. Just don't judge me for wanting a monogamous relationship.
Hey, let me ask you something. I know this guy. I think he might be a gay, but I don't know for sure.
A gay? What makes you think he might be a gay, officer?
Well, he wears shorts. He's always working out. He's got really defined biceps, tight abs, rock hard thighs.
How's the ass?
Good, nice, and high.
Yeah, I'd say someone's gay.
I've always felt like, kind of like last week when we talked about indie movies, like networks like HBO and Showtime and like the like premium cable and now streaming stuff like Netflix and Hulu have way more LGBTQ plus content than, you know, ABC, NBC, whatever, Fox, you know. The, like, most progressive queer sitcom that is, like, has been, like, successful on basic cable is Modern Family, which still is, like...
I mean...
Yeah.
I do watch it, but...
But then, like, the two... I would say the biggest, in recent memory, the biggest gay show has been Looking, and the biggest lesbian show of, like, all time has been The L Word.
I mean, you could say that Queer as Folk is The L Word, but the Queer as Folk came out in the early 2000s and kind of ended in the mid-early 2000s.
Right.
So, like...
I mean, The L Word aired in the early 2000s and Looking aired...
5 years ago.
And finished last year. But I put them on the same plane because they're kind of, like, for this generation of LGBTQ plus people, they're, like, the big gay show and the big lesbian show that people reference, you know?
It's weird. And this kind of goes into something that we're planning on talking about anyway. Because when I think of, like, the gay show that, like, means the most to me, it's not Looking. I don't know what it is, but it's not Looking.
And it's not The L Word.
Was not good.
Yeah. But that is an interesting thing about the two of them is that, like, critically, they were both very successful. But, like, that was in the mainstream media. And for, like, actual people watching it,
it was a little
different. No one watched Looking. Everyone hated it, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen every episode of it, but only because I felt like I had to.
Yeah.
And the only thing I've ever heard about The L Word is that it's just bad softcore porn.
It really is. And, like, straight people loved The L Word. And even today, like, you talk to lesbians and we're always going to be able to reference it because everyone's seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not good.
Right.
No one likes it. If I'm sitting down for a night at home and I'm like, oh, what am I going to watch over dinner? I'm not going to be like,
popping The L Word.
Yeah, I'm going to be like, I'm going to go watch 30 Rock, you know?
Yeah.
The L Word is not realistic. The L Word is not a good show.
Looking is, like, weirdly realistic.
Really?
And that's the only reason that I really kept watching. It was just the characters were annoying. The way that it was filmed and the fact that it was a half hour, but it wasn't funny. Like, just, it just was an awkward show to, like, watch. So, like, the show is bad. But the things that happened in it were, like, really, really realistic.
Oh, really?
And especially Jonathan Groff's character in it was, like, the reason that I loved it. Because I was like, I've never necessarily related to another gay character on television before Jonathan Groff's character on Looking.
I watched the first season, and then I watched the first half of the second season, and then I just couldn't, not even, I watched, like, the first two episodes of the second season, and I just, like, couldn't deal with it because it was so boring.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is The L Word about?
Nothing.
Is it just about lesbians, like, being lesbians?
It's basically, like, Friends, but they're all lesbians.
Oh, that sounds fun.
It would be if it was well written, and if the acting was good, and if it wasn't, like, just softcore porn. I really liked The L Word when I was, like, a teenager, and I was, like, watching it alone in my room, and I was like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, once I started watching it as an actual TV show, I was like, what the fuck is this? This is so bad. None of the characters are, like, relatable in any way. They're all sociopaths. None of them are interesting or, like, good people or relatable or, like, fun to watch. And they all just, like, I don't know, for me it was always, people were so excited about it because it was, like, the first time lesbians were on TV, but then lesbians would watch it and be like, but they're not lesbians. They're, like, straight women pretending to be lesbians.
Yeah. Isn't that the problem with lesbian porn, too?
It is, yeah.
Not to turn this into a porn episode.
Which I'm
But, like,
sure
that's what
do.
I've heard
yeah,
from,
yeah, yeah.
Not specifically you, but, like, from lesbians is that, like, lesbian porn is awful because it's just straight porn actresses pretending to be into each other.
Yeah. They don't understand how lesbians act.
See, no, that's not how Looking was. Looking was a whole bunch of gay actors. Looking was very much like, if you took Gilmore Girls and took out the family aspect of it, made it a half hour, and, like, put a dark filter on it, and made everyone gay. Like, that's what it was.
Right, so I've never watched Gilmore Girls, which you know.
It's just
so,
like...
I mean, I watched Looking. I know what Looking
yeah,
is.
Yeah, but... So for everyone else in the world that has watched Gilmore Girls but not Looking, that's kind of the same feel. I mean, not saying that Amy Sherman-Palladino created Looking, but, like...
But she did. I mean, Looking and The L Word essentially have the same plot, which is, like...
Gays in San Francisco?
Gay friends in a city trying to find love, and there's, like, drama.
I also have to just take a moment to say that this is... Looking is also where I found Russell Tovey. And for everyone that watched our trailer and took part in our poll on Twitter, thank you for helping me just solidify that Russell Tovey's ears are cute. Just needed to take a moment to say that.
ears are not cute.
But for everyone that didn't watch Looking, Russell Tovey played Jonathan Groff's boss, and they were a really hot couple. And they had a whole episode arc where they debated monogamy versus, like, having an open relationship.
There's a lot of that on the L Word, too.
And I spiraled out when they did it, because they did it really, really well.
But the other thing about Looking is that it had, like, because it was on HBO, and because it aired in 2014,
they
it had,
show,
like,
Andrew Keen and Boulder getting fucked.
Yeah. It had, like, crazy sex scenes. And the L Word kind of did, too, but because it was airing in, like, the early 2000s, the sex scenes were, like, equal in number to Looking, but they were just, like, they're so, like, weird and gross, and, like, here, I'm gonna, let's see if I can find a sex scene from the L Word, and we'll live react to it.
Oh, God.
All 97 of the L Word sex scenes ranked. Should we go on Pornhub and see the ones they have?
No.
What the fuck? Oh, well, yeah, of course they've all been removed from YouTube because they're just porn. All right, we're gonna go on Pornhub. I'll just scroll through, like...
Yeah, I mean, I know that that's what lesbian porn looks like.
I know you know what lesbian porn looks like.
Oh, my God.
I'm just saying, like, look how...
I don't like that.
Yeah, it's, like, very graphic for, you know...
Oh, that's sweet. It's
being
just
on TV.
Kissing.
Yeah, they were kissing. Isn't that nice?
They're in love.
But do you see what I'm saying? That, like, the L Word was essentially just porn, which is, like, why lesbians liked it but also didn't like it because...
They were like, well,
like,
I have to watch
they're
it,
like,
but
well,
it's
I'm
awful.
Like, well, I'll keep watching it. But it also just, like, it was just for, like, straight guys to, like, jerk off to.
Yeah.
And also then, like, in the later seasons, it becomes really, really, like, Will and Grace-esque, and it's just, like, they all settle down.
Looking, I'm gonna say, was a little more deep than the L Word sounds. I mean, they had someone who was HIV positive on it and dealt with, like, everything like that. There was a character that worked in at an LGBT, like, youth shelter. There was a lot of other stuff going on, and the sex only happened maybe once every three episodes.
And the L Word was, like, about sex, which is actually kind of interesting because it's kind of flip-flopped of the way that you, like, traditionally think of our communities, you know?
Oh, yeah. Like when I think of it, I think of, like, the gay scene being really promiscuous and the lesbian scenes being more like you, Holly.
But it's like the opposite of the two shows.
Do you think it's because of straight men?
I think so.
Great.
Isn't everything?
What's wrong?
No, no. Just found out I've got menopause.
Oh, kid. Oh. No, it's okay. No more periods.
Yeah, you don't have to take Carrie to the prom anymore.
No, no more mood swings. Eventually.
No more tampons or pads.
No more Midol or Excedrin or Tylenol or any of that stuff.
Yeah, but once the monkey goes south, that's the end of it.
No, kid, that's not true. There are a lot of menopausal women who are very sexually active.
Yeah, it's true.
Aside from Will and Grace, one of my favorite TV shows when I was younger was Ugly Betty. Ugly Betty was an interesting show because it was one of the first shows to have a major trans character on it. She was played by Rebecca Romijn.
Oh, okay.
Who is not trans. But it actually... I think it did a really good job, actually, for, like, the time that it was. Because it aired in, like, 2008.
Yeah.
And the only times that they, like, referenced Alexis being trans were when she came out. And everyone was like, wait, who is that? And she was like, it's me. And they were like, whoa, you're trans. And she was like, yep. And then, like, the issues she dealt with were, like, a guy played by Jerry O'Connell, Rebecca Romijn's husband, like, hits on her in a bar. And she's like, oh, my God, this is so amazing. Like, I finally get to have a sexual experience with a man. Like, this is so cool. And then he, like, hate crimes her. And it's like, I know that you're trans.
On Ugly Betty?
On Ugly Betty. Ugly Betty took on the social issues of the day. There's a whole plot line where she finds out that she has a son who she, like, conceived when she had sex with a woman before she transitioned. And she never knew about him. But then, like, the son shows up and is never like, you're trans. He's just like, hey, I'm your son. And then it's revealed that he's not actually her son. Anyway, it's a crazy show. But I always thought it did a really good job, aside from the fact that Rebecca Romijn is not trans. Like, for the early 2000s, it did a really good job of a trans character.
Hmm.
There was no, like, scenes of her looking in the mirror and, like touching her face and being like, oh. There was no, like, agony or, like, you know, masturbatory grief, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that, for me, was the first time that I was like, oh, this is, like, a great trans character on television. Do you remember seeing any trans people on television when you were younger?
No. I mean, if I did, they were always a joke. Like, it was always like, that used to be a man.
The classic joke of, like, it's a woman and then she, like, talks in a deep voice and everyone's like, ooh!
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, like, really strongly remember when Laverne Cox got cast on Orange is the New Black because it was, like, a huge fucking deal. And everyone was like, oh my god, like, the first ever trans woman playing a trans character. And, you know, her career kind of took off. But I do feel like people were kind of like, and we're done. Got him. Got one. That's it. You know?
Yeah.
Because then, like, aside from Transparent, which has, like, you know, its own stuff going on, but does
and really is on do a, Amazon.
Right. But it does do a really good job of casting actual trans people, except like as writers and as actors. Cast my girlfriend, Hari Neff. Hari, if you're listening, just give me a chance.
And Carrie Brownstein.
I'm leaving in that pause so that everyone knows how long it took me to cover. To recover from you saying the words Carrie Brownstein. But there aren't really a lot of other trans characters on TV. I know you watched the OA and there was some.
I did watch the OA. I don't know if it's a good show or not, but I loved it.
Was that kid trans or
non-binary? Yeah, it's a trans teenage actor playing a trans teenage character. And the things that I loved about it, not a main character. And the only time that they ever talk about him being trans is one, there's a drug dealer character and you see him like going up to the drug dealer and he's like getting hormones. And the drug dealer's like, oh, I'm out of your hormones. And the teenager's like, but I need them. But then like something drastic happens and it cuts away and like it's never really covered beyond that. And he comes down the stairs one night and his dad calls him by his like female name.
I remember you texted me about that and you were like, something huge happened on the OA. And I was like, what? You were otherwise... like, the guy's dad called him by his dead name. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, because otherwise they don't. Like, if you didn't know going into it, you could watch it and be like, this character isn't even trans. Like, but those two moments, I was just like, oh my god, this is great. And he's definitely not super popular in school, but he's not bullied or like, he's a loner, but they're all kind of loners. I don't know. But I liked it because he's definitely, I don't know, I guess we can look up how old he is, but he's definitely under.
Welcome to the show where we don't fact check.
He's definitely under like 15. Like, he's not like.
Yeah, 15.
Oh, whoa.
Nice job.
It was nice seeing someone who is younger, who knows who they are. And it's being broadcast on television, and it's not an issue.
And he's not white, right?
No. And I feel like not enough people talked about it or gave the OA, not that the OA is seeking credit for having a trans teenager on their show, but, like, gave the OA their due credit for, like, doing it in such a way.
Is Ian Alexander the first trans teenager to play a trans character on television?
Is he?
I don't know. Is he?
I guess you'll have to tune in next week to find out.
Coming at you next week.
No, but really, next week. Tune in and you'll find out the answer to that question.
Yeah. And don't Google it.
Got it!
What's going on?
My boys back there bet me I didn't have the stones to get your phone number.
I don't live in a cave, dude. I know exactly who you are. And I don't hit on freaks unless I know I'm getting paid for it.
So also, there's something really exciting happening over on Showtime, Home of the L Word, which is that on Billions. Do you watch Billions?
I don't, but I remember seeing, like, ads for it.
Me too. Damian Lewis, like, looking intense. That's, like, all I know about it. There is a character this season who is non-binary.
Oh, right.
Played by a non-binary actor.
I remember hearing about that. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know it was...
The actor is non-binary. Their name is Asia Kate Dillon. They are a non-binary actor. And they're, as far as everyone knows, like, the first non-binary person to play a non-binary character. And I'm learning right now from Wikipedia that they were on Orange is the New Black. They went to AMDA! You went to AMDA!
I did go to AMDA!
Congrats!
Wow.
Good job, Asia! But yeah, so they're the first non-binary person to play a non-binary character, which is so cool. And especially that it's on Showtime, which is like, and on a show that like no one watches.
Yeah.
And they did a really interesting. So, apparently, neither of us watches Billions, so we cannot confirm or deny this, but apparently they do a really good job on Billions, and there's, like, Emmy buzz.
What?
Yeah, like, literally. Dylan's breakout performance has arguably surpassed those of the show's established stars. In fact, it so impressed Showtime that the network planned to submit Dylan's performance to this year's Emmy Awards.
Oh my god.
But the thing is, like, for the Emmys, actor, actress, you know?
Oh.
Yeah, and so I'm glad you haven't heard about this because I can tell you about it. Clearly you didn't Google it when I put it in the episode outline.
I didn't because it was Billions.
They wrote a letter to the, like, Emmy Academy or whatever about why they don't think that actor and actress should be the categories.
Hmm.
And they basically asked, like, why is it divided that way? Is it because they, like, is it because of anatomy? Or is it because of, like, identification? If it's because of identification, then, like, where do non-binary people fit inside that?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's because of anatomy, then, like, why? And that's rude and gross. Like, are they gonna pull every person up and be like, well, what is your assigned sex? If you're an intersex person, where do you fit in? Even if you identify as female, if it's like, oh, I'm an intersex person, but it's based on, like, anatomy, then, you know, what's the whole...
This is interesting. And so, like, here's my question.
Okay.
You're the Academy. And I'm not, this is not me trying to combat it. I'm trying to see where it could go.
Yeah.
So you're the Academy and I'm Billions. And I'm like, where, if, like, we're going to submit this performance, we think that it's pretty great. Don't ignore it, but also don't give it a nomination because you think that just because it's a non-binary actor, you should. Where do you put it? And if they were to be like, you know what, maybe Billions, you're right, we're going to completely redo our nomination categories, what would you set the categories up as?
Well, that's actually, so Asia K. Dillon, like, wrote a letter to the Academy, and the Academy wrote back.
Oh.
Yeah. And was like, hey, you should have let me finish, bitch. The Academy was like, thank you for, like, bringing this to our attention. We had never thought about this. They basically were like, actually, I will read their response. The Academy rules say that anyone can submit under either category for any reason. The Academy supports anyone's choice to do that, and the Academy is not going to do any sort of check. Indeed, Emmy rules for the acting categories do not specify a gender qualification, saying simply for a continuing performance in a regular series. We are happy with our productive dialogue with Asia based on their very thoughtful letter. The Television Academy celebrates inclusiveness, and as we discussed with Asia, there is no gender requirement for the various performer categories. Asia is free to choose the category they wish to enter. So anyone can enter in any category,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really interesting because this has never been something that has been, like, needed to be talked about before.
Right.
Because no one non-binary has ever had the opportunity to challenge this before. And so I think it's really great that, like, this one person is kind of, like, dismantling.
I feel like that's just the Academy being like, we're open to whatever you think is right, but that still forces Asia to pick male or female.
They were basically like, I've done a lot of research into it, and I've learned that actor began as a gender-neutral term, and then actress came about to split off into male and female. So they submitted in actor, and were like, I am not submitting as a male person.
Mm-hmm.
I am submitting as an actor.
I like that.
I like that too.
I like that from their perspective, but I also don't like that because it puts them up against men and not women.
Yeah.
But, like, I see, like, I get it.
I totally get it.
And I like
it. But I also do think it'll be, obviously, the great hope of all of this is that they open the doors for, like, more non-binary people on TV and, like, getting awards and stuff. But I would hate to see that, like, actor becomes a category for male performers and non-binary performers, and actress remains a category for female performers. Because then to me, it kind of feels like you're lumping non-binary people in with men, mm-hmm. which they're not.
Right.
And also, yeah, and you're totally right. Like, making them choose is still...
I mean, on the other side of it, you can't have a non-binary category because then there's one person
right,
in
exactly.
it. And it's like, well, here's your
if
Emmy.
If it's, like, best performance by a non-binary performer, then it's like, congrats, Asia K. Dillon, come on up every year. Like,
yeah. Which, I mean, I guess could make everyone...
Well, yeah, I mean, like, if the Academy added a, like, best performance by a non-binary performer, it honestly would be a good incentive for major TV shows to, like, add non-binary performers to just, like, get in.
I mean, it would also
Which would also be very exploitative, but, like...
It would, because then, oh, showrunner would have to sit down and be like, all right, well, we need our trans character, we need our gay character, we need our man, and we need our woman, and we need our non-binary... Which is, like, way too, like, I would love it, but, like, is way too much for the idea of having Emmys.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, I think the solution is just that I have always felt that there doesn't need to be an actor and an actress category. It should just be 10 performers. Because I also feel like if you do just, like, best performance by a leading, or, like, best leading performer in, you know, a movie, a TV show, a musical, whatever, and you just make it 10 people regardless of gender, I think it is a good way to sort of be, like, look at the state of the art, you know? Because if it's, I know, we did just see Sunday the Perfect George. We saw it literally 2 days ago. It was a little bit like the Oscars So White thing where it was like, look, we have, like, physical proof that the film industry is too white and something needs to change. And so I think it would be interesting to do a year where it was just 10 performers, because the fact of the matter is, it would usually be something like 7 men and 3 women, except in years where it's like, you know, like 2015 when you had like Julianne Moore and Rosamund Pike and Reese Witherspoon and like all these people, I feel like there would have been more women. And I do think that the Oscars and the Emmys and the Tonys, apart from being, you know, a celebration of like the craft, I just made a jerking off motion for those of you listening at home, is also sort of a way to be like, this is what's going on in the world of our industry. You know, you look at the Pulitzers, which happened this week, where, you know, for drama, Sweat by Lynn Nottage won. And setting aside my personal feelings about that play, like, Lynn Nottage is the first woman to ever win 2 Pulitzers, and she's a Black woman. And, you know, the other 2 finalists were a white woman and a trans person who identifies beyond the binary, Taylor Mack. So that's like, you look at that and you're like, oh, the drama industry clearly is doing something right. That the best plays are being written by people who are not white men.
Right.
But then you look at, like, Peggy Noonan won a Pulitzer, and you're like, okay, so something needs to get better in, like, the world of commentary, because if Peggy Noonan can win a Pulitzer, like, what the fuck?
Who's Peggy Noonan?
She's... her personal hero is Ronald Reagan. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. That, I was like, how can I describe in a very succinct...
Okay.
That's who she is.
I see.
And she won for commentary.
On what?
I think she won for, like, commentary on Trump. Yeah. She won for her commentary on the election, which, like...
what was her commentary?
I don't know. I didn't read it because I don't like her.
Great. Well, someone read it for me and tell me.
She's racist and homophobic. She's like, if she's a bad person, and I don't feel bad saying that.
How did she win the Pulitzer then?
Because the Pulitzers are supposed to be beyond like political leaning.
All right.
But anyway, all of that is to say that, like, I think it would be interesting if one year the Emmys did away with the gender categories and were just like, this is who the best actors are this year, and what does that say about us?
I would love that if it would work. Like, if there was a world that we would live in, that we could live in, where that, like, we, the Academies or the Oscars or the foreign presses or whoever it is, could genuinely pick the best 10 performances without gender in mind.
Exactly.
And do it right. But it would never,
yeah.
That would be great.
You know what? We'll do it. This year, coming at you in December, I'm making this promise live on air. Coming at you in December, we are picking the best 10 performances of the year without regard to gender in every media.
Okay.
And we will see what that says about the world.
That could be fun.
Yeah, we're gonna do that. Someone write that down and hold us to it.
When I saw the breakdown for the character, I felt like, oh my gosh, there I am. There I am. There Asia is. Here is language to describe something about me that I've actually never quite been able to put together. When I first read the script, I wept. Not only because it was me, but because a character has never said that on television before. When I was growing up, if there had been someone like Taylor on TV, it would have really meant something to me. So it feels good to be playing a character that might mean something to someone else who's like me.
I wanted to briefly touch on bisexuality on TV.
Bisexuality! I don't know why I did that.
I love that. We're gonna use that every time we talk about bisexuality. Bisexuality on TV is, like, pretty much always a joke. There's this kind of really common joke in TV shows of, like, a female friend being, like, jokingly attracted to her other female friend. It's always played as, like, a, oh, ha, ha, she wants to kiss the girl, you know? That's me on a sitcom.
I can't believe you're going to be in my top 10 performances. As a bisexual female.
For my performance as bisexual. No, no, no. I was straight man looking at bisexual.
Oh, yeah. That's...
let's be clear. When I submit, I'll clarify. Jay Hunt for straight man looking at bisexual woman. I used to watch How I Met Your Mother. I don't know if you ever watched it. It was a bad show.
I've seen episodes.
But, like, there was the whole running joke of Allison Hannigan being, like, wanting to fuck Kobe Smulders. And, but then being like, oh, just kidding. I'm really doing a wide range of characters and things all here. And then there's very, very rarely bisexual men, because people don't believe that bisexual men exist.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a bisexual man on television.
The only one that I can think of that is, like, actually canonically bisexual that I think is really good is the guy on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which I know you stopped watching.
Yeah.
Her boss, the guy with the hair. This guy.
All right.
You can see right here.
That's him kissing a man.
He came out as bisexual with, like, a big song. His whole plot line has been, like, him figuring out what bisexuality means to him. And, like, what it means to be bisexual when you're, like, a man in your 40s and like coming out as bisexual for the first time. And I really liked it because you usually see plot lines like that where a man gets divorced and starts dating men as like, oh, he's been gay the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Grace and Frankie.
Yeah.
It's never really like he gets divorced and then he falls in love with a man and he's like, but I'm bisexual. I'm not like, I didn't get divorced because I'm gay. I got divorced and also I'm bisexual.
The only bisexual character that I really feel like is good that I have seen is Viola Davis on How to Get Away with Murder.
Yeah.
But even that, the actual bisexual content in it is all of 4 seconds.
Yeah.
In the entire 3 seasons that it's been on the air. And it's even questionable if she's actually bisexual or if she's using it as a toy in like her plots.
Yeah, and the thing about her is and it kind of falls into that weird trope of like sneaky manipulative bisexual people using their sexuality to like get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing about that show is like you never know when someone's telling the truth. So it's like impossible to evaluate whether it's good representation. Because even at the beginning when like Jack and Conrad got together, I was like, is this really happening? Is this manipulation? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
There's Callie on Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, she was bisexual. She is no longer on the show. But she was. She dated a man and a straight man, and then she had sex with a straight man, had a child, and then married a lesbian.
Just like me.
And then she cut her girlfriend's legs off.
Oh, very just like me.
And now she's with a woman again.
Oh,
and I think she's a really good model of what a bisexual character should be on television. Callie Torres, played by Sarah Ramirez. Now some may say, are you just gay? Why don't you just go gay all the way? But that's not it, cause bi's legit. Whether you're a he or a she, we might be a perfect fit.
Who are some of your other favorite LGBTQ plus characters on TV?
I have two that I can think of. One of them hasn't come out yet, and you're not expecting this. On Fuller House, Candace Cameron Bure has a gay son, and they are just ignoring the fact that he's gay.
Well, they're also ignoring the fact that Kimmy Gibbler is a lesbian.
They're not ignoring it. She made out with Stephanie in season 1. But her son is a young gay character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I feel like they're just completely ignoring it. And they're using the trope of a gay character to make him more interesting.
Like
he's maybe the best character on Fuller House on Netflix. Go watch it. Just completely ignoring the fact that Candace Cameron Bure is a giant homophobe.
Yeah, we hate her.
That's
why I'm not correcting you because you're saying her name wrong.
I am?
Yeah, but I'm not going to correct you. I'm not going to tell
you because I want it. Like,
I'm going to keep saying her name wrong because she sucks.
Is it Bure?
No.
What is it?
Bure.
Bure?
There's no L.
Candace Cameron Bure. That's awful. Her name sounds better as Bure. So the show Fuller House does have a gay character on it. And I feel like if they were to acknowledge it while he's still young, because right now he's playing like, what, 8?
Not even.
Like 7?
Yeah, he's like 6.
If they were to be like, he's gay and he's young and that's okay, you don't have to be 22 to figure that out for yourself.
Right.
That would be great. Do you think they're going to do it?
I don't know. I honestly doubt it.
I think that if they do, it'll be because everyone hates Candace so much that
they're
just
like,
going to force it in
take
there.
That. There's going to be a...
I would love that episode, though. And they've actually given him a girlfriend in the last season.
Yeah.
He had that little girl that he was, like, running after the whole time. But I would love if it was, like, and then there was a boy that he was friends with and they, you know, didn't fall in love and, like, stuff like that. But he just had that moment where it was, like, I'm more attracted to this boy than I was. Or I'm more interested in becoming friends with this boy than I was with a girl. Because you know what? If that would have been on Full House in the 90s when I was watching it as a little kid, who knows what I would have been now? The second one is San Junipero, if you're ready to talk about that.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think the best LGBTQ plus representation on TV of all time, strong stance, San Junipero.
No, yeah, completely
agree.
Black Mirror
season 3, episode 4, San Junipero.
Yep. Even though it is a bisexual girl and a lesbian girl, they do a really good job representing the whole spectrum.
Yeah.
Spectrum.
I actually don't think we should say what it's about.
Yeah,
because I think people should go watch it.
I also think everyone should watch Black Mirror in general. I think it's one of the best shows on television in recent memory.
And if you're not gonna watch all of it, just seriously, if you're listening to this podcast, you will like San Junipero.
Yeah. Season 3, jump to it. It's right on Netflix.
Season 3, episode 4.
And then if you like it, go to season 3, episode 1 and watch Nosedive.
Yeah.
If you like that, then go watch Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Because Black Mirror is a wild show. But San Junipero is, I mean, we've talked about this multiple times, the best episode of television in the history of television.
Yeah.
But also it's just really great representation. And I think that's all we can say about it.
I don't want to say anything else.
Yeah.
When did you know that you liked women?
I like men too. Equal rights.
Okay. But when did you know? Do you always know?
I was married to a guy. A long time I was married. I always knew. I mean, I'd be attracted to other girls. Co-workers, friends, some waitress who'd serve me. There were crushes. God, were there crushes. Never acted on any of it.
I mean, if we're talking about currently airing shows with gay content in it, my favorite show by far is a show that we both watch called The Real O'Neills.
Which is arguably one of our favorite shows.
Yeah.
One of the more progressive ones that's happened in a while. It's about this kid named Kenny who grew up and is growing up in an Irish Catholic family in Chicago.
In Chicago, yeah.
His parents are separating. His sister's like a klepto, but she goes through like a...
She's a criminal.
Yeah, that's a good way to sum it up. And his brother, he's just not the brightest person in the family.
Yeah, but he's like a super popular athlete.
And Kenny comes out to his family.
And that's the pilot.
Yeah, and the show kind of deals with all of these different issues. And the thing that I do like is that it's not just about him being gay. It's about the parents going through a divorce and dealing with that versus religion.
Yeah.
And all of these things. And it's never...
And his plot lines are always about him being gay. But then there's always a B plot. And sometimes it's the A plot and Kenny is the B plot. But like the plot that is not about Kenny is always about the mom is dating. And like the dad is dating sometimes too. And like the brother is like trying to figure out what he's going to do about college. And like the sister is like scamming people across the country, you know? And it's never, like, centrally focused on him being gay.
One of our favorite jokes is he's, like, sitting at the breakfast table or something, and everyone is kind of dealing with something. And then he brings up the fact that he's gay again, and they're like, Kenny, not everything's about you being gay. And he's like, is it not?
By the time this airs, it may have been canceled.
I really need a season 3, though.
Me too.
In the beginning, you were kind of like, oh, I really love this. I just wish that there were other gay people on it.
And then there is. Well, actually, it was really interesting because they brought her on as, like, the lesbian of the school, and Kenny outed her to her parents because he was like, she's ashamed and it went well for me. And then you found out that her parents are like incredibly homophobic and they did not accept her and they have since kicked her out of the house, which I really loved that because it was a nice way to kind of be like, not everyone has this experience and we are aware of that. You know, there are queer kids who get kicked out of their houses.
Yeah. I also love that they are able to work a plotline like that into a comedy because the episode where she kind of, spoiler alert, moves in with them for an episode because her parents are gone or whatever it is such a funny episode.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it kind of kicks you when it's like, it's
she got kicked out because she's gay. But the whole time you've been like, haha, it's so wacky. And then suddenly you're like, oh my God, she's homeless because she's gay. And like the comedy for both Kenny and Allison, the punchline is never that they're gay. The punchline is something that is funny because they are gay.
I'm really interested to see what they do with her in the third season if they get renewed, because I feel like audiences have started to really like her.
Yeah.
And even in one of the last episodes, you see her kind of in a glimpse with another girl and they're kind of like out, and you can tell that they've been out a couple of times.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, we're gonna be able to see her kind of evolve as a character as opposed to just being like a D-list character amongst all the other characters.
Yeah.
But I will say one of my favorite plot lines is the relationship between Kenny and his mom, played by Martha Plimpton. I love the dynamic of a mom who is incredibly, incredibly religious and has one way of thinking. I hope that it gets renewed for another season.
Me too.
I think we need it.
Kenny, I've decided I'm glad you told me about being gay.
You are?
Yes. Admitting you have a problem is the first step towards fixing it.
Looks like she has a whole list.
Yeah, no, I'm not really sure it's something that you can fix, Grandma.
But that's just the thing it is. For example, whenever you feel a gay impulse, take a cold shower.
Mm-mm, I prefer baths.
So did the Romans, and we know what happened to them. Also, write with your less dominant hand. It'll fix that hinky wiring in your brain that makes you gay.
No, again, I'm not really sure that's how it works.
Perhaps most helpful, I'm going to send you to this.
A gay conversion camp?
Oh, camp sounds fun. The rest seems a little odd.
There's a show that I don't actually watch, but I've heard a couple things about. You and one other person are the only people that I know that watch this show.
Yeah, it's One Day at a Time, which is on Netflix. A remake of a show from a long time ago. So the original show was like one of those All in the Family sitcoms.
Okay.
One of those like Norman Lear things. And it was about a white family where like the parents got divorced or something. And now it's been updated and it's on Netflix. And it's about a Cuban American family who the parents were both soldiers, which is awesome.
Oh.
And the dad is like out of the picture, and it's a little boy, a teenage girl, a mom, a grandmother, and their like wacky white neighbor.
Me.
Yeah. The very exciting thing about it was that this season, without sort of any like heralding or even mention in the press, like no one knew this was going to be a plot line. They just dropped the show, and then people started watching it and were like, the daughter is a lesbian and like comes out this season. When I started watching it, I fully had no idea. And I just started watching it because Rita Moreno's on it. And I love her.
I also remember you being like maybe the daughter's a lesbian, but oh, no, she's not a lesbian.
In like the first few episodes, I was like, oh, the daughter's a lesbian. But like, I think every teenage girl on TV is a lesbian. And then I was like, oh, no, she's not. And then I was like, oh, wait, yes, she is. And then I was like, oh, no, she's not. And then I suddenly was like, oh, she's coming out right now. And it was very exciting to watch that develop because every other TV show I've ever watched about a gay teenager has been like, this is about a gay teenager. You know, like there's faking even, it, there's the real O'Neills.
Even in the real O'Neills, he comes out in episode one and then it goes from there.
And for One Day at a Time, like the daughter doesn't come out until about halfway through the season. And the best part of it, in my opinion, is that she comes out to her brother first and he's like, all right. And then she comes out to the mom and the mom's like, great, don't tell your grandmother, she'll be really upset. And then she comes out to Rita Moreno and Rita Moreno's like, woo, hooray. And then her mom has sort of this crisis of being like, oh, her grandmother's really accepting, so why did I tell her not to tell her? And then she's like, oh, I'm not okay with this.
Oh.
And the mom kind of had, totally without ever involving the daughter, has to come to terms with her daughter being gay.
Oh, I love that.
And it's this
that.
Amazing plot line of the mom basically being like, I don't want her to know that I'm not comfortable with this. I have to figure it out for myself, which is a plot line I have never seen on TV.
Even with the real O'Neills, that's not the case.
Yeah, they like involve him.
Yeah.
The other amazing part of it is that it's sort of like she's planning her quinceañera the whole time, and the dad comes in from out of town for the quinceañera in the last episode, and she tells him, and he's like, you're not my daughter anymore. And just, like, leaves. And so she has her, like, father-daughter dance. And he's left because she's a lesbian. And so the season ends with the whole family, like, coming together and dancing with her for the father-daughter dance because her father has left. I have not cried that hard at television.
Do I need to start watching this show? Like, I wasn't expecting to get emotional during this episode.
It is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen on TV. The way the plotline kind of happens is that there's this whole thing about Rita Moreno is making her a quinceañera dress. And she is like, I don't want to wear a dress. I don't like it. And Rita Moreno is like, you have to wear a dress. It's your quinceañera. They're like fighting. And like, they can't see eye to eye. In the last episode, Rita Moreno makes her a pantsuit out of the same fabric that she made the dress.
Oh.
It destroyed me. I was like sobbing.
That's so bad.
I know. I have a problem with the fact that lesbians on TV are always like very femme, and like you never really see a plotline about a lesbian being like, I don't feel comfortable with femininity. And this TV show just like handles it so beautifully. It wrecked me.
Okay, well, question for you. The real O'Neills is kind of about him being gay, and that is borderline the main plotline. Is that how it is with this show?
It's one of those family sitcoms where like,
so there's other stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What is the other stuff?
It's always the B plot, pretty much, is her being gay. It was only the A plot for one episode. It was because she tried to date a man because she was like, I'm not gay. So she tried dating a man, and then she was like, ugh, I totally am. The main stuff going on is that a lot of the plot lines about them trying to afford things, or like there's a season-long arc about them trying to figure out what their relationship is with Christianity and religion. The one thing that I have heard from a lot of people who have watched it that obviously I am not really qualified to comment on, but I just want to mention, is that none of the actors in the family are Cuban.
Oh.
Most of them are Puerto Rican, and then the son is Colombian, which is a little bit not so great.
Yeah.
And like a little weird that they were so excited about like representing a Cuban American family, and then they were like, but we'll do it with all Puerto Rican actors. Because in that case, I was like, well, then why not just
make them Puerto Rican family? Now I need to put that on my to watch list.
I know. I love that the podcast is just me being like, you have to watch this and you have to see this.
I just came out to Abuelita.
You did?
And I think it's beautiful.
You do?
Claro, and I accepted immediately. No questions asked.
Well, that is great.
Miss Alvarez, you have the coolest family. I'm going to call my grandma. Maybe she's finally ready to hear that I'm a vegan.
I'm going to Skype Carmen and tell her the awesome news.
I love my family.
We loved you too.
So this week's game is...
We I love the game, let me just
the
say.
The game is so fun.
I love this game because no one wins.
Yeah, oh yeah, and it's just screaming.
Unless, you know, tweet at us if you think anyone wins.
Yeah, yeah, tweet at us who wins this round of the game.
So this week we're doing favorite gay TV character, favorite lesbian TV character.
Yeah.
Ready?
Yeah.
Okay, favorite gay TV character.
Okay.
One, two, three. Max Bloom from Magicians. Happy Endings.
Ooh.
Neither of us have ever watched.
Okay, so my character, very quickly, it's a TV show called The Magicians based on the book series The Magicians. His name is Elliot. He's super cute. He's the third most attractive wizard after Oliver Wood and Neville Longbottom. In the pilot, he looks like he's going to be just like the gay best friend, but then he is like secretly actually...
Oh, he's cute.
I know. He's secretly actually his own character with his own plot lines and is so... good, and he's incredibly talented with, you know, his magic abilities. And he is the only character with actual depth in the show. Because, I mean, it's on sci-fi. So so none of the characters are really... I mean, it's based on a book, so they have a little... So they have, like, actual source material. But none of the characters are really that interesting, except
Wait
for
a
him.
Second. Who's she?
Oh, her name's Alice. You would love her. She has giant boobs.
Oh, my God.
That's not her. That's her.
I love her.
She's one of the main characters.
Wow. Hello, Alice.
I'm
oh
trying
my
to see
God.
Where you can see
Look
her
at that
boobs.
Skirt.
She...
Is she a lesbian? What's happening here?
She's not.
What's going on here, though?
I can't tell you.
Why is she touching someone's boobs? Why is someone touching her boobs? What is this?
That's what's happening.
Who is this? What's happening? So my person is Max from Happy Endings, and I know you never watched Happy Endings.
I did not, yeah.
But it's one of my top two favorite TV shows of all time.
I also didn't know there were gays on that show.
One of the main characters is gay, and he's like, he's just like a like gross layabout guy. He's like always unemployed, and he's like gay, but it doesn't matter. He's one of the first sitcom characters who just like is gay and like isn't the gay friend and mm-hmm. doesn't have like plot lines about him being gay. Like he does have plot lines about him being gay, but they're all like, the only two episodes that have like plot lines about him being gay are one where he comes out to his parents and they're like, who cares? And one where he pretends to be straight so that he can get tickets to the Cubs.
Favorite lesbian TV character?
I know what yours is gonna be.
No, you don't!
Yes, I do.
No, you don't!
Yes, I do!
Okay, ready? One, two, three. Cassima. Santana Lopez.
Yeah. Mine's Cassima from Orange is the New Black.
Who?
No, sorry. Mine's Cassima from Orphan Black.
Oh, I was like, who the...
Can you imagine? I was like, oh, you've never seen Orange is the New Black? No, Cassima from Orange is the New Black.
From Orphan Black.
Yes. Did I just say Orange
is the New
Black?
You said Orange is the New Black again.
God damn it. Cassima from Orphan Black. Cassima from Orphan Black is... She's a scientist, but she's also a clone.
I know who she is.
I know, but... Listeners don't.
Oh, right. Sorry. I forgot we were recording a podcast.
We're recording
a
podcast. I'm not just hanging out.
I'm sorry.
With you.
I'm sorry.
The fact that she's a lesbian is a very minor detail in her whole plot line. She is one of the main four characters. I mean, she has a girlfriend and she...
Delphine.
And...
Listen, I watch YouTube compilations.
Yeah. And she has, you know, some lesbian stuff going on. But the fact that she's a lesbian is not necessarily a part of the show. And because she's just one of the many clones, that's kind of the factor that separates her from the other clones. But they're all sisters and they love each other so much and they really protect her a lot. And she's the smartest person on the show. Whenever something goes wrong, they're always like, Cassima, what do we do?
She has
and
glasses.
She's like, she does. And she has braids and she looks great. Who's yours, Jay?
Mine is Santana Lopez from the TV show Glee. What can I say about Santana? You know what? I'm not going to say anything about Santana. We're going to talk about her in detail on an upcoming episode.
So stay tuned for
We're
gonna more
about
Santana.
We're going to say a lot about her in a future episode. What I will say is that I know she is like so problematic and kind of at times an offensive portrayal of lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I have to say to that? Mm-hmm. Who cares? Because I love her.
I do love her. She was almost my pick, but I didn't choose her because I knew she was going to be yours.
Only straight I am a straight up bitch.
Special thanks to my mom, who listened to our first episode and called me and gave me feedback, and who included in her feedback, quote, I forgot about Leap Year, but it is a really great movie, isn't it?
thanks to my roommate, Rachel, for clearing out for the weekend.
Thank you, honestly, to Hulu and Netflix. And thank you to, this is going to sound cheesy, but like, thank you to you, like the listener.
Because... I thought you were saying thank you to me. And I was like, oh my God. But yeah, sure. That's fine too.
Because without you, we would just be talking to no one.
Which we technically are.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. Thank you to Vitamin C for getting me through this day.
Thank you to Carly Rae Jepsen, whose sweatshirt I'm wearing right now.
Thank you to Naya Rivera.
Thank you to Stephanie Hawkins for the pictures. Thank you to Scott Holmes for the music. Thank you to Sarah Kleist for the microphone. Special thanks also to my best friend Kaylee, who listened to the first episode and is so much smarter than both of us about like audio recording.
I don't know. Today I fixed the microphone.
That's true. Robert did fix the microphone today.
So watch out, Kaylee.
He's going to steal your degree. But Kaylee helped us figure out a bunch of ways to make the podcast sound better that we will not be implementing until episode 4 because we've already recorded this episode and the next one. So
but get ready.
Stay tuned for episode 4. We're going to sound fucking great.
Yeah, we are.
Which we're recording in like 2 minutes.
Don't break the fourth wall.
Right, sorry.
We record this live every week.
Yeah. You can follow us on social media at One More Thang with an A because I was taken. And you can follow us on Facebook now. We have a Facebook page.
Yeah, we do. Maybe we'll go live on it sometime.
One More Thang Podcast.
Also, you know, when you're listening to this, you can post a status and be like, I'm listening to One More Thang. And so that all of your friends know you're listening to this beautiful and relevant podcast.
Huge, huge thanks to everyone who listened to our first episode and like told your friends and family about it. Like, thank you to, actually, I'm going to say some people right now who told their friends about us. Thank you to Rachel Burns, who told her entire company about us and told everyone in her Instagram story. Thank you to Bailey Gaskin, who live tweeted our episode and some of her friends like subscribed to it.
Stephanie Phoebus posted about it on Facebook. Like, it's been insane. And I think
Rachel Cambery posted it on Facebook. Thank you, Rachel.
The thing that's most humbling about this is that people are like actually listening to it.
Yeah.
They're not like, oh yeah, we're listening to it, but they're like paying attention to it. Like, I got so much feedback from people that I wasn't expecting to get feedback from that were like, oh, I love this. Like, can you talk about this? And I loved when you did this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, maybe this is working.
Yeah. Thank you. Honestly, thank you to everyone who I haven't talked to in a while, who has like texted me or Facebook messaged me and been like, I love the podcast. It's so great.
Everyone that really just took a chance on our first episode.
Yeah. Everyone who listened and then told us that they were listening and, like, gave feedback and asked questions and, like, is, like, engaging with us. Thank you so much. That's so kind of
and
you.
And we promise we have some really good content coming up.
Yeah, our first interview episode is next week.
It is. It's so good, too. I'm really excited for people to hear it.
A couple of people asked if we could have, like, a hub for things that we talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually do, so clearly you just weren't paying attention well enough.
We also didn't point it out, but...
In the description of every episode, we have a link to a Google Doc with a list of every single thing we talk about in the podcast. TV shows, movies, people, places, everything.
Yeah.
That you can just go to, and there are links to check those things out if you want to know more.
And links to articles.
Yeah. Links to articles for further reading, links to YouTube videos of
a whole bunch of stuff. Just a dog of the day.
And because I said that, now you have to put a YouTube video of a dog in there.
God, okay.
Tricked you.
True. I will call you out, though, and say that if you haven't told other people to go listen to our podcast, you should. Tell everyone to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Two people wrote reviews, and they are the true MVPs.
I think everyone listening to this episode right now should log on to iTunes and go write us a review, or, you know, drop us a couple stars.
And if you don't know how, that's fine, because I don't either.
You don't?
No, I've no
You
idea.
Just go to iTunes. There's like three columns, and one of them is ratings and reviews, and you click on that, and as long as you have an iTunes account, you can go in and, like, write a little review and give us a couple stars and post it, and then other people can read it and say if it's helpful. It's very much like Amazon reviews, where you can just, like, do it.
Also, if you have any sort of, like, if you have anything you want us to talk about, if you have any, like, questions or, I don't know, concerns, I'm 100% serious about this. If you disagree with something we said, or you think something we said is, like, wrong or offensive, let us know, because I love being criticized. I love learning. If you think something that we said was, like, inappropriate or wrong, please seriously reach out to us on social media, and we will, like, read the articles you send us and, like, talk about them.
Also, if you want to hear about anything specific, let us know. We got one bit of feedback that was like, I want to hear you guys talk about this, and we were like, you know what? Okay.
We actually got a couple of people have reached out to us.
And we immediately created an episode about it. So, you know, we are listening just like you're listening.
Have a nice life. Goodbye. That was beautiful. You did such a good job of expressing yourself.
Bad guy is doing something.
I'm so sorry. You have to do that. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was screenshotting a funny Snapchat. I'm sorry.
Rachel, you just...
It was funny. I'll post a picture of the Snapchat.